Art and the sense of smell may seem like an unusual combination, but the two are being put together in a multi-sensory exhibit at the Pulitzer on Washington tomorrow afternoon. It's called the 24 Hours 15 Cents Exhibit. Joining me to talk about it and more are Saskia Wilson-Brown, founder and director of the Institute for Art and Olfaction. The Institute supports interdisciplinary creative projects that explore both the science and the aesthetics of scent. Eileen Giselle is a writer and artist for the 24 Hours 15 Cents exhibit. Thank you so much for being with us. This is a most interesting subject and not one I've talked about before, I must admit. But Saskia, tell me about aesthetics and scent. The two typically don't seem to go together.
Well, visual aesthetics and scent don't go together. You're right, because it's so hard to translate one to the other.
Sure.
However, that's an interesting challenge for artists, I think, and a good source of opportunity for people to explore it.
Well, how do you put them together?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on who you're asking. Uh-huh. There's some people who are synesthetic, so they're able to sort of see color when they smell things. Mm-hmm. For the rest of us who do not have synesthesia, I think it's sort of a bit of a guessing game when you're talking about translating smell to visuals.
Eileen, you're the artist. How do you do it?
So, yes. Well, it's nice to be called an artist. I'm not really used to that because most people don't talk about writing as art. But of course it is. So for me, in some ways this was kind of a natural challenge or natural thing for me to do because as a poet, I often gravitated towards the olfactory. A lot of the images that I incorporated in my work were olfactory or had to do with a sense of taste. So I've always had a kind of, real love of how language can evoke scent. So that's one of the things I really tried to do in this project is write in a way that accurately captured the scents that were so important to the participants in this project.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Okay. So one of the most exciting scents that I encountered that I'd never thought about before was the smell of sweet potatoes being cooked in a pile of dead leaves that was set on fire. So this was back when you could set a pile of dead leaves on fire, and that was not illegal. Of course, now it is. And one of the participants who's, I think, around maybe in his late 60s was telling me about how one of his fond childhood memories was of these burning piles of leaves, and then they would throw a couple sweet potatoes in there and cook the sweet potatoes that way and eat them afterwards. So for me, especially the autumnal nature of that was really beautiful. And it was a strange smell, but also one that I really wanted to convey with language.
You know, it's funny, as you mentioned burning leaves, I can still smell burning leaves in the fall from when I was a kid, and that was a long time ago.
Yes, and I think in some ways what you're getting at is how some scents are in some ways confined to certain generations. I'll never smell that. But through this experience, I was able to have the opportunity to try to put myself in the vantage point of people who smelled things that I never will smell.
And Saskia, we all know that when you're getting ready to sell your home, what you have to be doing is baking bread when potential buyers come in, because that helps. Because why? Why would that help?
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of retail companies who are busy developing scents for their shops for that very reason. There's no public science on the relationship between smell and reaction, consumer reaction. But there's a lot of work being done on it. For instance, at a company called International Fragrance and Flavors, they're actually tracking behavior associated with certain scents. And one thing we do know more anecdotally is that baking bread is comforting for people. So they do that in order to kind of create a sense of homecoming.
What brought you to this place of putting these two things together?
Well, it's sort of the mission of the Institute for Art and Olfaction to experiment with scent. I had a personal interest in using scent as an art form, just because scent has traditionally been associated primarily with commerce and with, you know, you can buy this, but you can't engage with it as a creative person. So it was sort of a desire to subvert that a little bit.
What are people actually going to see when they go to the exhibit tomorrow?
They're going to see the prints that the Firecracker Press made out of Eileen's writings, and they're going to smell a lot. And maybe if they close their eyes, they'll see some fond childhood memories or not.
You did a lot of research, Eileen, and interviews, as I understand it, with people in this area.
Mm-hmm.
What were those interviews about? Just doing what you just did, remembering the smell of burning leaves, that sort of thing?
Well, what I did was, well, first of all, it was really important to me that I go to the neighborhood in which the participant lived now or where he or she grew up, because I wanted to immerse myself in that place. Even though I'm from St. Louis, I still don't know so many different corners of the city. And so I would go meet the contributors, and I do think they're contributors because the stories I still see as theirs. Maybe I wrote those stories, but the stories are still theirs. So I would meet the contributors in their neighborhood, and initially I would not talk about smell because a lot of people, and I'm sure Saskia, you've encountered this, a lot of people, when you ask them about smell, they kind of clam up. It's hard for people to think of smells in their past automatically. And usually what I found ended up happening was that once we actually started talking about where they were from and some of the key events in their lives, smell just naturally followed. So for the first 20 minutes, sometimes for the first 45 minutes, we would talk about our lives and our backgrounds. And then gradually I would ask questions, pointed questions, about how smell might be a part of those backgrounds, how smell might be a part of place. And then that became a catalyst for charting out a kind of scent map of the city.
Can you, aside from the burning leaves, give me one or two very quick examples of things people told you that...
Oh, yes.
They recollected?
So I'm actually looking right now at an example story from a 17-year-old in Benton Park. And she was mentioning the Bradford pear tree that comes out every spring and how it's everywhere. And she smells it when she's running track, and it stinks. To her nose, it stinks. But then once that wears off, it smells nice. So that was just one example that probably lots of people are familiar with. Other people mentioned, of course, the brewery. I mean, there's so many. So the scent of a child's sweat was one that came up more than once as well.
Saskia, one of the things we have to remember is that not all smells are pleasant.
Yeah.
Do you have unpleasant smells as part of this exhibit?
In this instance, I tried to mitigate that unpleasantness by not using, for instance, meat smells, which are horrible smells in the absolute. But, you know, for instance, one of the participants talked about the smell of sautéed garlic. A beautiful smell in the air. We all love it when we're hungry. But when you actually get that in a bottle, it's pretty overwhelming.
Sure.
So some of the, you know, quote-unquote unpleasant smells became necessary. But I did try to soften the formulas.
Of all of the senses, how important is the sense of smell?
Well, the sense of smell is linked to learned behavior and memory pretty directly. So in a very primal sense, in terms of how we experience our life, it's extremely important.
Have you been involved in any research with regard to that? I seem to recall reading probably a few years back now about if you study and have a certain scent while you're studying, if you can recapture that scent while you're taking the test, you're going to remember what you studied better.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think, you know, the olfactory bulb is connected to memory and again, to learned behavior. So if you can sort of target the learned behavior, which is, you know, learning to answer the questions correctly, and the memory, which, of course, is the things you're studying, you can use scent to help both, I think.
In my notes here, I have noted that you can make an association between scent and happiness, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that because you're having that memory of Eileen's burning leaves?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's actually an interesting argument against aromatherapy. Not to anger the aromatherapists, but if lavender is, you know, seen by most people to be soothing and calming and it helps you sleep. Not for the one person who was maybe, for instance, attacked in a lavender field, because his or her associations with the smell of lavender would actually be quite traumatic. Mm-hmm. So it is extremely personal and extremely subjective, also very cultural.
What about the mechanics of smell?
There's two theories about how we smell. The prevailing theory is that we have receptors in our nose that fit a shape of a molecule, and it, you know, it locks in. It's the lock and key theory, and it says, oh, garlic. The other theory, which was proposed by a scientist called Luca Turin, who currently lives in Greece, is that scent emits vibrations, and the molecules kind of shimmy and shake, and the vibrations trigger receptors in our nose, which then, of course, triggers our association with the scent. So it's kind of not too 100% clear yet how we smell.
We should point out, too, and I'm sure this is something you've given a lot of consideration to, that it can be very protective. I mean, it can warn you of danger.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those primary, or I should say primal urges that scent triggers, okay, rotting meat, don't eat it, or burning fire, you know, run away, things
sure,
like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Eileen, did you get into any of that part of it during your research with folks here in St. Louis?
I did. I think that, you know, this is, you know, I called it a scent map, but in some ways it's also a kind of memory map. And so the associative potential for smell took a lot of the participants into really dark places. Some of them, some of the most beautiful, wonderful moments of their lives, but some of them, some of the most harrowing moments of their lives. And so to kind of think about how smell is directly linked to one's experience of the great highs but also the great lows was a kind of privilege for me. One of the participants who unfortunately passed away in the last month is a Holocaust survivor, and one of the smells she described was the smell of Berlin in 1945 upon her return, and the rubble and the bodies and the kind of stench from the middle of the summer. And to speak with someone about that, but then also speak with her about how warmly she remembers the lilac tree that grew in her yard when she was a girl, almost 100 years ago. It's humbling to witness both of those at the same time, to see that both of those are in the same human experience. So.
Saskia, it's something that I've noted many times, and most people probably have, and that is that you can detect a scent walking down the street. Perhaps it's from a bakery or whatever, and how it can take you back. I mean, in an instant, it can take you back 50 years, longer.
Yeah. I mean, it's that tight link between scent and memory. You know,
what would happen if we lost our sense of smell?
You know, people have.
I know.
They're called anosmics. And, I think, they adapt and they live. I think it's a real tragedy, of course, yeah. Because it's my given profession. But, I think they just have to rely on the other senses more. But you lose that visceral feeling you get with the smell. The closest second, I think, is sound. Music has the same capacity to take us back really quickly to a place.
Yeah.
But not in the same primal sort of visceral way, you know.
You have a background in film as well.
I do.
And of course, that would have to take me to Smell-O-Vision.
Yes. In fact, we did. We restaged a famous old movie that was made with scent in mind several times. We've been engaging in that.
But Smell-O-Vision never really caught on.
It didn't, no. There's a couple challenges when working with scent in the public realm. One is controlling the smell. And sort of meeting everybody's comfort levels. Two, and really the primary one is getting the scent out of the theater. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Also, people's reactions to smell are very different. You know, people have sensitivities. The example I gave earlier about lavender, you know, some people react very negatively to other smells that, you know, other people love. And it's very hard to control. And there's nothing Hollywood hates more than something that's not in their control.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where is all of this going to take us, do you think? I mean, where do you want it to take us?
I don't really know. I ask myself this at 3 a.m. Where is this all going? I do know that there's a lot of work being done with technology and scent. So, for instance, a woman in Los Angeles called Jacqueline Morey has been pioneering something called a scent collar, which is meant to send little smells out when you're in virtual reality scenarios. There's also a fellow in Boston called David Edwards who's developed something called the O-Phone, which would allow me in Los Angeles to send Eileen here in St. Louis a message of a smell that she could then receive in St. Louis.
Mm.
The problem with all these technologies is that there is no RGB of scent. So if I want to...
What's an RGB?
Roy G. Biv.
Red, green, what is it? The sort of the three main colors, the makeup visual.
Uh-huh.
Red, green, and what is it? RGB?
Red, green, blue. Red, green,
yes.
And blue.
Yeah. But it's actually CMYK, whatever. Anyway, yeah. there's no building blocks of scent. So if I wanted to send her a very specific smell, like let's say the specific coffee from Colombia that I have, I couldn't do that. I could just send her a sort of a generic coffee if she had that, unless she had all the exact same molecules here in St. Louis that I had in LA. So there's no digitizing the molecule.
But what would be the value of that? Just kind of a cute thing to do or a fun thing to do?
Well, I mean, I guess it would be another means of communication. I mean, it would be a gimmick initially.
Oh, sure.
But I think mainly it's sort of a sense of being able to feel close to somebody, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would be one value. I could be like, hey, Eileen, or, you know, here's this perfume I developed. Check it out. You know, and she could smell it immediately.
Well, advertisers are doing that now, Eileen and Saskia. Yeah, are they not? I mean, you can scratch a magazine
absolutely
element and get the
actually one of those is here. It was a moment of nostalgia for me. I interviewed actually my next door neighbor, who I got to know a lot better in the process, and he mentioned the Jupe cologne from his brother's magazine, which for a time seemed like it was everywhere. It had an exclamation point at the end, and so there were moments in the interview process, Don, where I felt nostalgic with the participants, and that was really fun. I was able to have a kind of vicarious nostalgia for certain scents that just are no longer around. And you know, when you were talking, Saskia, about how you can't digitize the molecule, in some ways, maybe that's why scent is so precious to us now.
That's exactly it.
Because we can't digitize it. I mean, anymore, the visual, the auditory, the music scene, the film scene, certainly television, all of it is, you know, everyone downloads it on their phone and experiences it from their phone. And we can't do that with scent. And that's actually good.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. Stand by.
I think it's a good thing.
No, but I agree. That was one of my initial interests in this field, is because I was working in film and television and I was just being bombarded with this barrage of information all the time, constantly consuming. And scent is different. You know, one, it's a lot more internal. It literally goes in your body, these molecules.
Sure.
You consume them in a different way. But also you can't control it in the same way you can visuals. And, you know, it's beautiful for that reason.
We have a caller here who wants to get into the conversation. Our time is limited, but let's bring Valnor in. He's calling from Alton, or she, I'm not sure. Go ahead, Valnor.
Hello. Yes, Valnor, he. I actually have two memories of smell. I've got a colleague who's, as a child, was in a house fire during Christmas, and so now he can't be around an open fireplace during, like, snow being outside, because everything smells of cinnamon, even though he no longer has a sense of smell due to the fire. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that. And two, I actually had an anxiety attack during the first showing of Wizard of Oz at the Muni, mainly from my military career myself, because of the heat of the day and the smell of someone's cologne behind me. So I just wanted to bring those to the light.
You know, you mentioned the military, which is actually an anxiety. It's interesting because actually they're developing, in San Diego, there's a whole battlefield recreation where they incorporate scent in order to prepare the soldiers for the scents that they'll come across in the battle, and to sort of mitigate that potential anxiety. Sort of off topic, but it triggered that thought.
That is most interesting, and the idea of having an anxiety attack in a public place as a result of a scent is an interesting one.
And it happens for sure. Yeah.
Well, it certainly has happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that occurs to me as we're having this conversation is doing research, and Eileen, you've just gone through this, is how personal it is. I mean, people are really giving up something of themselves when they talk to you about this, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's why it was important for me to go to their neighborhood. Often I met them in their homes if they were comfortable with that. So that they felt comfortable already. And, you know, I didn't know any of them already. So for me, one of my challenges was more as a conversationalist than as a writer, in a way, to make them feel comfortable in that situation and to help create a situation in which they would want to share or even be able to share some of these really potent memories.
Saskia, let me ask you, because our time is winding down, about the exhibit tomorrow. We know it's at the Pulitzer on Washington. What are the hours?
It's from 3 to 5.
Uh-huh.
We'll be showcasing Eileen's writings in a series of beautiful prints made by the Firecracker Press up in the Old North. Uh-huh. And smelling some of the smells that were associated with the stories. Actually, we'll be smelling all the smells, yeah.
And just very quickly, smelling the smells, are they in little bottles? Or
well, the prints are scented. The Firecracker pioneered this really cool technique where they letterpressed the smells. And then on top of that, we'll have them in little samples so that you can experience them without the paper as well.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Good luck. We'll put the information on our website. Saskia Wilson-Brown, founder and director of the Institute for Art and Olfaction. Eileen Giselle is a writer and also involved with the exhibit tomorrow. Thank you, ladies, so much for being with us. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Kim Oswalt, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis On the Air, funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Thank you for being with us. I'm Don Marsh.